At the beginning of a new year like this, we have the opportunity to look at where are we standing, how are we doing, what has the last year been, and how do I want to proceed into this new year. And today I'd like to look at this intersection with regard to the Dharma path, and especially I'd like to look at skillful ways of being in the world in this day and age, ways of being on our Dharma path that we can apply in this coming year. And you might have noticed there's a lot happening in the world. It seems to only get worse over the years, from climate crisis to more natural disasters to war and etc. Too much to name. And on top of that, we all go through our own personal stuff, of course, as well. Challenges and difficulties that we face in our lives. So it can be hard to talk about this or think about this, but the thing is that this is a truth that there is suffering in the world at large, and in our personal lives. And I also want to name another truth that is here as well, which is that there is also, at the same time, a lot of beauty, a lot of goodness, kindness, gratitude, a lot of peace in the world and in our personal lives. So these two truths, so to speak, are both equally valid and present. And you can say maybe that the truth that is the truth of suffering, which is the first noble truth, and the truth of the freedom from suffering, which is the third noble truth in Buddhism. And we all know and experience both of those in our lives. But how can we hold those to both? Well, sometimes when we think about all these difficulties in the world and personally, for some of us maybe, we might be, you know, get discouraged or overwhelmed or frustrated. And sometimes what even can come up is that we start to feel guilty if we feel feelings of happiness or peace coming up. How can we be happy if, you know, if there's so much suffering going on? But I think that we need both of those truths in our lives. We need to, in order to be able to hold all of that that is going on, all of the difficulties, we need to open to the truth of not difficulty, not suffering, what I call the truth of beauty or goodness. This encompasses all of the beautiful and wholesome experiences and aspects of our lives. The ease, the peace, kindness, the warmth in our lives. Not only our own beauty and goodness, but also the beauty and goodness in others and in the world. And we often tend to focus on all the suffering and all the challenges that are happening. But there is so much beauty and goodness out there. And most people are actually good people, if you think about it. People who are kind and generous and warm-hearted. People who want to help others, and people who want goodness for everyone in the world and for the world itself. Meditation practice can help us to develop this skill of opening up to all this goodness and the beauty. Because when we practice Vipassana, and I try to guide ourselves a little bit in that today, then we can let things arise just as they are, whether it is something that is challenging, the suffering, or something beautiful. And often the beautiful part, the goodness, is not so much emphasized. And I think it's actually really important to start noticing all this goodness, all this beauty that is already here, that is arising in our own practice and in the world. All these times when we feel a little bit of peace or a little bit of relaxation, it can be tiny, can be big, but there are many, many moments throughout the day, probably for each of us, that happens. Many moments in the world that happens. And so every time we open to this, we open to this beauty, to this goodness, then we are strengthening that aspect. It's like training a muscle. By paying attention to it, we are growing this muscle of noticing it more and more, letting it in more and more. And maybe you recognize that when you get angry or frustrated, then it's like you're wearing these glasses that you see everything through this angry lens or this frustrated lens. So not much has to happen, or you kind of explode already. While if you feel at ease, relaxed, and just enjoying yourself, then you're wearing those kind of glasses. And then, you know, that same thing might not throw you off and might just be okay. So remember, you know, I sometimes got so frustrated with the computer not doing the way what I want, and then out of frustration, and then walking around with this frustration, and then, you know, in contact with other people, just being frustrated right away, even though they didn't do anything wrong. Just kind of this frustration overflowing to other people as well. And other times, you know, just a peaceful meditation and feeling super relaxed and at ease, and then just being at ease with other people, being able to open my heart to other people. So it's strengthening this muscle of beauty is actually really worthwhile. And sometimes we think, oh, if we focus on that, that's really egoistic and I shouldn't be paying too much attention to all this goodness in myself. But I think it's actually opposite of egoistic. I think it's altruistic, because if we're wearing those beauty glasses, as I call them, then we can be much nicer towards other beings around us. We become so much more kind and caring for others. And the Buddha says, and this is one of my favorite quotes, I quote this a lot, so I probably quoted it a few times already here. It says, whatever one frequently thinks and ponders upon, that becomes the inclination of the mind. End quote. And sometimes it might not feel like we can control what we can think and ponder upon. Sometimes things just happen, right? Just get all these thoughts and all these emotions and feelings. And that's okay, actually, because our main task is to notice what is going on, to notice what is present in this moment, whether it is something that is suffering or something that is more in the beauty realm, the goodness. Because if we start noticing whatever is going on, then we start to see that both are here in us. And the invitation is to start noticing also the goodness and the beauty, the kindness, the care, the peace, the ease. And what can be helpful in the process is not only noticing that in ourselves, but also in others around us. And maybe we have a really kind neighbor that we notice, oh wow, this person is really kind. Or we notice it maybe in our pets, or they're, you know, or we have a dog, how happy they are every time we come back home. Or in the world, there are so many, you know, good people in the world, maybe scientists or activists or healthcare professionals or you know, volunteers in hospices or in animal shelters, etc. So many people who try to help and do the good thing. And every time we think about these kind of things, we are strengthening this muscle of goodness. And this noticing of goodness is actually a very good basis for being able to hold the suffering that we will inevitably encounter. And without this balance between these two aspects, the suffering can be really overwhelming. But if we manage to balance them, start to pay attention more to also the goodness, the more we are balanced. And important also to start feeling the nourishment of the beauty, the nourishment of the goodness in ourselves and in the world. And know that it's not a bad thing to take all of that in. That we don't really need to feel guilty about it. But like I said, it's altruistic to focus on these things, since it's so helpful to become a more kind and caring person ourselves. And just to name it, there are also active ways in which we can cultivate this goodness, like the Brahma Vihara practice, if you're familiar with that. Brahma Vihara means heavenly abodes, which for example is the loving kindness practice, compassion practice. These are really good ways to cultivate wholesomeness, goodness. And I gave a talk on loving kindness last time, or some weeks ago. And that's on my website, in case you're interested. But today, I'm just focusing on the noticing it, noticing what is already here, whether that is something wholesome or unwholesome, suffering or goodness. But just so you know that you can actively cultivate it too. And so, to talk a little bit about the challenges that we all face in ourselves and in the world. Challenges and difficulty and suffering are part of our experience, part of the First Noble Truth, their suffering, part of being human, at least as long as we're not fully awakened. And I'm sure we're all heading towards that, probably really quickly, hopefully. But as long as we're not there yet, then we all encounter this difficulty and suffering. And as long as there are humans living together on this planet, there will be conflict and wars and, you know, suffering going on between humans just because of our innate, not an innate, but because of the nature of our minds, who are unpurified minds. The more we purify them, the less that will happen. And this was true at the time of the Buddha as well. He actually advised a lot of kings around, you know, not going to war, and, you know, kings would come and visit him, should I go to war or not? And he would usually try not, you know, not to have them go to war, but he wasn't always successful. Sometimes he would actually, you know, not be successful and the king would go to war. And there are also lots of, you know, disputes and quarrels around in the monastic order. And there are, you know, monastic rules that came out of those quarrels and disputes that they had. The Buddha was like, oh, we need to make a rule for this because we don't want all these quarrels and disputes. So it's probably not really doable to avoid conflict and difficulty and suffering. But what we can do is face it, open to it, see it as part of our human conditioning. Realizing this is the truth of suffering. Feeling our vulnerability. Understanding that this is the way things are. And when we open to this vulnerable place, to this place where we can open to suffering, then there's a softness that can arise. It's like a softening into the truth of the difficulty. Sitting amidst all of it, the world of suffering and the world of goodness. And then one of the suttas, there's this god, and in the Buddhist scriptures there's different layers of gods and godly realms. And this god Kamada said to the Buddha, "It's too hard, Blessed One, it's just too hard." And then the Buddha replied, "They do it even though it's hard." End quote. So we see this as an encouragement to keep going, even though it's hard, things are tough. Even this god who is supposedly in this really good place, this heavenly realm, thinks it's hard, let alone us. And one of my teachers, the Burmese monk, Sayadaw Utechaniya, he says, "You must always remember that there are the knowing minds, and the known minds. The known minds don't need to be calm, don't need to be peaceful. They can be angry and raging. All of that can be going on. And all that needs to be steady is the knowing mind. That's the only steadiness you need." End quote. So he points to the difference between that which knows and that what is known. So we can know the rage and the anger. But that knows the rage and the anger is calm, can be calm. And our Vipassana practice prepares us for this sitting in the midst of all of it. It invites us to open to all of it. And I would suggest to start small, not with like your biggest suffering. And maybe we can start with some discomfort in the body when we sit in meditation. Maybe our knee starts to hurt and we just try to open to that discomfort, that pain. And see if we can just be with it without having to change anything. And then slowly and gradually kind of expand to more difficult situations. And if we do open up to whatever level of difficulty, then we can start to notice that things come and go. The discomfort or the difficulty arises and it passes as well. It's actually not permanent. Nothing ever stays the same. Also not the difficulty. Our inner landscape is just changing all the time and our body is changing all the time. And it's really remarkable that when we start to sit with these minor discomforts and we start to see that they just pass away and we don't need to do anything for it, that we just need to bear witness only to the truth of this moment, that that's our job. And then it's inevitable that at some point this goodness or this beauty, ease or the relaxation or the peace will arise. And of course, that will also pass at some point. So this is one of the core teachings of the Buddha, the truth of impermanence. It's a flow of experiences that occur, experiences coming and going. And it also kind of points to that none of these experiences are a separate self. It's just experience flowing. Anger comes and visits us. And doubt comes, or sadness, or grief, loneliness comes and goes. And then if we see these mind states as just visitors, it can be very helpful. Because last time when I was here, I quoted the poem, The Guest House by Rumi. And I thought this was actually really good occasion too for this poem. So I'll quote it again. "This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond." So whenever a crowd of sorrows visits us, maybe we can remember this poem and see that these difficulties are just visitors in our minds, in our hearts. They're not ourselves. They're only here temporary. And the Buddha often said that what is impermanent cannot be self. And if it were self, then we could decide not to have any sorrows, not to have any bodily aches, not to be ill, etc. Or whatever our self wishes. But we can't really control any of it. Sorrows and beauty and goodness come and go. And these all come and go based on these previous causes and conditions. I see it kind of as this hourglass where all these previous causes and conditions kind of filter and they end up in this little, what do you call this little neck thing, this little thing where this, the grain of sand goes down. And we're now in this little neck. And the grain of salt that we're shaping right now is what goes to the future, what shapes the future. So in this little neck, this is the only moment that we have some control. And we can shape it in the direction of more goodness and wholesomeness, or more suffering and unwholesomeness. So this moment is what can shape this next moment and the rest of the future. And what I've been talking today about is that all these things that I've been naming can help us to shape the future in a more wholesome way, in this more beautiful way. And we do this through noticing this beauty, as is obvious, the beauty in ourselves, the beauty in the world, the goodness, the kindness everywhere. And we also do this by opening to the suffering in this moment. And that seems a little contradictory maybe, but opening to this suffering will help it to let it flow through us instead of that it becomes tight and constricted. So resisting the suffering is actually going to make it worse. Well, if we open to it, it can be a flow. It's like the visitors that come and go into this guest house. So sitting amidst all of it, all of the beauty and all of the suffering is in itself an act of beauty. Even if it seems hard, like this God was saying. And we won't always feel that beauty right away if we open to the suffering. But we don't have to. We can know that we're contributing. Our little grain of salt in the sand in this moment is contributing to something wholesome for the future. If we open to what is here right now. So hopefully we can shape our future, this new year, with this wholesomeness of opening to all that is here in this moment, the suffering and the beauty. I'll end with the quote by the apostle Bartholomew. Is that the right expression, right pronunciation? I only know the Dutch pronunciation for this apostle, Bartholomew. Many of us spend our whole lives running from feeling, with the mistaken belief that you cannot bear the pain. But you have already borne the pain. What you have not done is feel all of you beyond the pain. All you are beyond the pain.